Hey, welcome to day 11 at the World 2020 qualifier. We've reached the business end of the tournament now. Group stages are concluded and we're about to move on to the playoffs. No Russ again today, so joining me is a regular guest on the show, Peter Della Penna. Thanks for coming on, Peter.
Thanks again for having me, Andrew.
Okay, so we'll start with the match that took place at Malahide this morning between Ireland and Jersey. Jersey had a decent start to their innings. They were 106 for 2 in the 16th over, but the wheels sort of came off from that point and it was just a clatter of wickets.
Well, they got to a stage where they looked like they were a bit antsy or a bit just anxious, and they started playing some kind of funny shots, and there were some sweeps and reverse sweeps, and instead of just playing orthodox cricket and just continuing to move on and try and launch in the last 2 to 3 overs, they just, I think, got a bit overexcited at times. And, you know, that second wicket that fell, Jonty Jenner was playing very well. He looked very sharp, and he looked like he had his eye in. And he just kind of tried to walk across the stumps, and he played this paddle sweep to Paul Sterling. And, you know, even though the replays showed that he was hit a fair ways outside of off stump, those kind of shots are what got Jersey into trouble. And I think when I talked to the captain, Peter Goff, after the match, to his credit, he made a fair point that kind of adventurous spirit is what led to the win over Hong Kong in the first match. Both he and Ed Farley in the first partnership in that match, they were just doing all sorts of crazy things to throw Hong Kong by surprise in terms of paddle scoops and ramp shots and reverse sweeps and, you know, skipping down the track and going back and forth across the crease. And Hong Kong just seemed very unsettled by that. Mm-hmm. And he said, we just tried to be bold and be brave and be courageous. And we didn't want to go through the 20th over just knocking ones and twos and be satisfied with 130 or 135, that the boldness which got us the wins against Hong Kong and Nepal, we didn't want to die wondering. And even though it wound up resulting in a big collapse going from 106 for 2 to 122 all out, he said, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down fighting. So the fact that, you know, Jenner got out sweeping, Anthony Kay got out trying to play a sweep to Sterling. You had Peter Goff himself almost got bowled trying to play a kind of a silly reverse sweep, reverse paddle shot to Sterling. They were trying to be as creative as they possibly could. And today, Ireland was just too experienced to have a counter to those kind of tactics. And that's what resulted in Jersey being held to 122 despite the platform they had.
And then Ireland's reply, led by Paul Sterling with 55 from 38 balls, he's sort of come into form at just the right time, I suppose.
Well, I think it was interesting. He just looked more comfortable batting with Porterfield at the top. Porterfield and Sterling have been the opening combo for 4 or 5 years now in 2020 and 50 over cricket for Ireland. And Paul Sterling said, when I asked him after the match, why did the team switch strategy to have you open with Niall O'Brien instead of just keeping on with the Sterling Porterfield partnership? And he said the thing behind it was that they wanted to give Niall the chance to have some freedom to swing hard at the top as opposed to just knocking a ball around for ones and twos in the middle. And it just didn't happen. The opening stands that they had, I think it was 2, 3, 9, 9 and 4. Were the 5 opening partnerships that they had between Paul Sterling, Niall O'Brien, and then when Niall set out the last match against Hong Kong, Sterling opened with Andy Balbirnie. Those partnerships did nothing. So the fact that the captain moved himself back up to the top, it just seemed like everything was a lot more comfortable, a lot more in sync, a lot more in tune, and Sterling, you know, not coincidentally, has his best score of the tournament. He'd been struggling with the bat coming into this match, and comes in and seemed like he was playing with a lot more freedom and a lot more just self-assuredness, and, you know, scores 55, and in addition to the wickets, he had a big impact on the match.
So that result knocked Jersey out of the tournament, but I think it's safe to say they've defied their pre-tournament expectations. Obviously, they beat two teams that played in the last World 2020.
No, absolutely. And they had excellent preparation coming into this tournament. They went down to Sussex and they played the warm-up games against Kenya and UAE, and they beat Kenya in that match. And just the familiarity with British conditions, I guess you could say, with where they're situated in the Channel Islands, also contributed to the preparation and the ability to come into this tournament playing sharp. And some people might say that only having an island with 100,000 population and a small talent pool as a result of that could make finding quality players difficult. But the counterbalance to that is that they're so close that there's a lot more chemistry that's built up a lot quicker, and there's a lot more cohesiveness. And because there's only a handful of clubs across the island, everybody knows each other's strengths inside and out. And that was very evident in terms of team chemistry. Their cohesiveness was far and away better than other teams in the group. And it showed in the wins that they had against Nepal and against Hong Kong. And even in loss today, they still had a tremendous amount of fight in the field.
So moving now on to Hong Kong, they've had a bit of an odd turn. They've sort of lost to the weaker teams and beat the stronger teams. You've played Namibia today at Clontarf. They sort of came out firing. Jamie Atkinson opened for the first time, I think, in the tournament. Earth and Armoured scoring 98 from 55 balls, and they scored 197. Obviously, Earth and Armoured dominated that innings, but I think a pretty decent batting performance there from Hong Kong, probably the best of the tournament.
No, it is, and they had been struggling throughout most of the tournament. That they had a lot of guys who were making 20s and 30s, but not really going on to do anything significant. In that top slot, you had Irfan had been opening with Anshuman Rath throughout the first series of group games, and Rath was staying in and spending a lot of time in the crease, but he wasn't scoring a lot of runs. Quite often, he would come out 20 off 30 balls or 25 off 35, something along those lines, and he just was not giving that extra lift, that extra surge in the power play overs that the team had been getting in the past from Atkinson and Irfan Ahmed. And I think just having Atkinson up there with a player like Irfan, the two of them have come up through under-19 cricket together. They're very familiar with each other. That may have given Irfan a bit more confidence and made him a bit more relaxed and able to produce a performance like he had today with 98 off 55.
The Namibia innings, not really much to write home about there.
Well, they were house on fire in the first couple overs. In the second over, Jerry Snyman hit four boundaries, and they were really going full bore right at the top of the chase, and they had to. But you knew that it could only hold up for so long, and once wickets started falling, they were never going to be in it for too long. And sure enough, the fifth time he tried to clear the ropes, he was out caught with Snyman at the crease. They were always in with a chance. He's just that explosive. But once he got out, Namibia had really no chance, and they folded pretty much not long after.
Moving now to the third and final match today at Malahide. I think you called this on on our preview. US would start slow and finish well, and that's exactly what's happened in this tournament.
Yeah, it's remarkable. The end result, you take a look at the U.S. team, and they're 3-3, but two of the three wins are against top six ODI associate nations and two teams who have qualified for the knockout stage. And if you take a look back at the losses they had, Nepal, retrospectively, was the worst team in this group. Not just, you know, the fact that, yeah, they finished on 3 points, but they were really, really bad. I mean, they were hopeless in a lot of those games. The Ireland match was just a complete debacle. And with their tournament hopes on the line against Jersey, they just didn't show up. I mean, it was a really, really pathetic batting performance they had on TV yesterday. And USA made a huge tactical blunder in that opening match. They won the toss, and they elected to bat first. And when you consider the fact that USA, most of those guys had never been to Ireland, had not been to Belfast, had no idea how that wicket was going to play. Their warm-up games were in Brady, so they hadn't been to Belfast, they hadn't been to Stormont to know what the wicket was like, how it was going to react. It had been raining for the 3 days prior, so the wicket had a lot of moisture in it, it was going to be damp, the outfield was just, there were not very favorable batting conditions in the very first match of the tournament. And their bowling is their strength. And instead of putting Nepal into bat on that first morning, USA wins the toss and decides to bat first, and they just kind of stumbled their way to a very meager total. And that was the only match Nepal won. Every other team that Nepal played against won the toss and sent Nepal into bat first, and Nepal's batting just crumbled. If USA had won the if USA had sent Nepal into bat on that first morning, been able to judge how the wicket was going to play and put Nepal under a bit of pressure, and you have a leg spinner like Timal Patel who can bowl and attack aggressively in the first innings, instead of the target that he had to defend, USA, whatever they were, was 120 or 123, and Nepal just patted him around for singles. Nepal didn't have to take any risks against Timmel in the second innings because the target was so small chasing. If it was the first innings and they're worried about setting up a target that they can defend, they were going to take more risks against Timmel. Timmel would have been a lot more threatening in the first innings bowling. And if they're trying to hit out in the last five overs and getting catches on the boundary and getting stumpings like Timmel had been doing the rest of the tournament, USA would have won that game. And that's a big regret that the team is going to have, having made that decision in that game. But just in general, yeah, they're slow starters because they didn't have the preparation that they should have had, that other teams did have coming into this event. It took them half the group games to build some sort of chemistry and figure out whose roles, were going to be filled by what and how people could play off of each other. And you see the result. They dominated Hong Kong in the match yesterday. They were just on top of that game almost the entire way. Against Papua New Guinea, they have an incredible opening partnership. They get a big boost at the end from Nicholas Stanford. And Papua New Guinea were three wickets down in the power play and really out of the chase before it even started. And on talent basis, USA is more than competitive with these teams. But once again, the administration has really put their own team behind the eight ball, and USA just became too much for them to overcome by the end of the group stage.
And obviously, I was watching the game on TV, and US seemed sort of very lively in the field, which, going off what I've heard about the earlier games, wasn't perhaps the case earlier on. What do you think sort of changed?
I think the fact that the qualification was at stake. The guys had a lot of motivation knowing that they were still alive with a chance to possibly make the knockout stage in this game. But coming off the two wins, the confidence was high. Guys were feeling more comfortable again with what their roles were. And I think if you ask some of the guys on camera or on with a recorder going, they would deny it. But what Akeem Dotson said after the Namibia game, I think he kind of lit a fire under some guys in the team, especially Mohammed Gauss. Mohammed Gauss, as the captain, he was very passive in the field the first three games. He wasn't bowling his full complement of overs. He was not really aggressive in terms of where he was fielding. He wasn't aggressive bowling. He just very lax in terms of everything he was doing on the field. And I think what Dotson said in terms of kind of calling on some of the more senior players to step up and really show some character and show some leadership, I think he made some people sit up. And those last three games, Gauss bowled all four overs. He stepped up. He took on the responsibility. And he performed fairly admirably. And if anybody who was watching the match on TV could see today, He bowled with a lot of fire and a lot of passion, and when he took those two wickets, he was running around the field as excited as anybody else and jumping up and down and with a huge smile on his face. And that kind of emotion just wasn't there the first three games from Gauss, and it wasn't there from some other players too. You can say Dodson as a senior batsman, as a senior member of the team, what he did to kind of call out some of his teammates, it had a positive effect. It can go both ways. Sometimes guys can get discouraged and it can cause division, but everybody saw who was watching the match today, Gauss and Dodson and everybody else were getting along more than okay, and there was a good team spirit to end the tournament.
So the upshot of those results meant that Ireland, surprisingly, I suppose, given what we expected to happen in the afternoon matches, topped the group. Hong Kong second, Namibia third, and Papua New Guinea, who would have topped the group had they won that match, were now in fourth, and they sort of won defeat away from missing out on the World 2020. So I suppose we'll look at the playoffs now, which start on Tuesday. Hong Kong play Afghanistan in the morning. What's your prediction for that?
Well, going by the form guide, you'd say Hong Kong has a good game, then a bad game, a good game, then a bad game. So they flopped against the USA, and then they come out like giants against Namibia. So based on their kind of seesaw character throughout this tournament, I would put Afghanistan as the favorites in that game. Hong Kong just seems like they're going to, after coming up with a tremendous performance, they could lay an egg in that game, and then I could see them coming back and winning that second chance game to still reach the World Cup. But I would put Afghanistan as favorites in this game.
Yeah, I think I would, and then Hong Kong would play Papua New Guinea in the third qualifying playoff, and so you know, obviously going off the pattern, Hong Kong really favourites for that. Maybe a Netherlands in the second playoff on Tuesday. This is one of those games that could go either way.
I think for Namibia, it comes down to the openers. I mean, Snyman has had a phenomenal tournament. He just totally destroyed USA. He, along with at the top with Stephen Bard. Bard in particular against Papua New Guinea had a huge match, and when they fired, Namibia has gone on to win. When they've folded up meekly like they did against Ireland, and like they did against Hong Kong today, that's when they've been in trouble. So if those two can stay in, especially Namibia batting first, and you see some early fireworks from Simon, then Namibia has a very good chance to win the game. But if they've got a tall chase, if Netherlands comes in and scores 160, 170, and Snyman doesn't get going, then Netherlands should have no problems winning that game.
And then the loser of that game will play Oman in the second chance game. Do you think Oman can perhaps pull off another surprise and get through to the World 2020?
I think they're a team that's similar to Namibia in terms of the amount of depth or lack of depth they have. I think Jitender Singh has performed admirably at number three for Oman, and he's been responsible on the batting side for a few of their wins, but in those wins that they had, there wasn't much required from the middle order because he did the lion's share of the work. But when that middle order has been exposed and he hasn't performed, that's when Oman has struggled. So if he doesn't perform, they're in trouble, and the bowlers have to put in a huge effort. You know, Muniz Ansari, if you got to see him in Scotland, and anybody else who saw him in Scotland, you know, in a game like he had against the Netherlands, taking four wickets at the death and getting three bowls in an LBW, you know, he's just a fearsome pace bowler, and yeah, he can be a game changer. But if his threat is neutralized in the field, then that's going to make things difficult for Oman.
So that just about wraps it up. I think we're in for an interesting few days next week, and I look forward to it. And thanks for coming on the show again.
Thank you, Andrew.